Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Life and Leadership Gap Analysis Series. On this series, we are talking about closing the gap on what we know intellectually and what we do when we're in the middle of the action. We're exploring the principles in motion, getting back to the basics by visiting all the greats that we know and love, like Stephen Covey, Jose and Don Miguel Ruiz, Patrick Lencioni, just to name a few. In fact, this conversation is part of a 12-part series where we are exploring the 7 habits of highly effective people and the 5 agreements. Our intention was to bring together inspired minds for meaningful discussions about the principles of life and leadership and to explore the gap between what we know and how we are living and leading these principles. Are you sharpening your saw, like Stephen Covey would say? Can you say that you are truly impeccable with your word, like Don Miguel Ruiz would say? We are your hosts. I'm Charmaine Hammond with Hammond Group, and my co-host is Christine LePerrier with Leader in Motion, and we both work together to inspire and develop healthy, well-developed teams. I've worked in the correctional system with oil companies, nonprofits, and everything in between, and Christine has worked with everything for profit from manufacturing vehicles to growing consumer packaged goods. And our experience truly has covered all bases. We are going to be talking to Marilyn Suttle today, who is a founding member of the Evolutionary Business Council, the author of a phenomenal book, Who's Your Gladys? She is also a transformational worldwide speaker and has spoken on some of the biggest stages, including Jack Canfield. She's a customer service expert and a frequently called upon expert from media. Welcome, Marilyn.
Thank you for having me here. I'm so excited.
And Christine, I'll pass it over to you to take away the show.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Charmaine. Marilyn, we're so happy to have you here. Thank you again.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
So we have to start with our question. When we threw out the 7 habits of highly effective people and the 5 agreements, this particular one, habit number 7, sharpen the saw, really stood out to you specifically. So can you tell us a little bit about why that is?
Oh, I sure will. Well, I've always believed in human potential. And one of my favorite things to do is work with somebody until they pop, you know, that not the bad kind of pop, but I mean, you know, when they just come alive and they reach that next achievement in their life. And for me, in my business, it's been really important to keep sharpening the saw to stay relevant. You know, the economy's changed, and staying relevant in social media, things relevant with my clients, means sharpening the saw continuously.
Really good point. I love that, Marilyn, because some of my clients and corporate clients have actually said they've had their best year ever, or best years, I guess, during the economic downturn, and I think it's because they're doing what you're saying. They're staying relevant. They're staying ahead of the game. They're not buying into, you know, the economy situation, and I would suspect they're doing all kinds of activities in a business sense to sharpen their saw. What kind of things are you seeing businesses do to stay sharp, to sharpen the saw, as Covey would say?
You know, I'm seeing them doing things in many different ways, and one that you might not expect is helping their employees with self-care, extreme self-care. And you think, this might sound weird because people are doing more with less, and how are you going to be adding to the self-care portion when you need so much out of your people? But I've seen masseuses coming in at lunchtime. I've seen, you know, gym memberships and exercise buddies being formed. I've seen mat rooms for people to just go chill for 15 minutes and do a little meditation or prayer, whatever they need to do. But this is one aspect, the physical body aspect, that when you sharpen the saw, it's good for business. Like, I don't know if you've ever thought of self-care as being selfish. Especially women, we tend to think, oh, that's being selfish, I'm too busy. Do you ever feel that way?
I hear it a lot, yeah.
Oh. And what the truth is self-care is good for business. Because if you think you have 2 people in front of you, one looks haggard and stressed and overworked because they're putting in too many hours, they're trying to do too much, with too little sleep, and then you see this other person who's got bright eyes, who looks interested and engaged, who are you going to want to do business with? It's huge. So sharpening the saw from a personal standpoint, from your physical health and self-care, is really important, and it's really good news because you get to feel good. And when you feel good, you do better.
I think this is such an important habit. And the funny thing for me is that I only understand this habit because I didn't live it. Recently, I had days in consulting where I was working 7 days a week, and I actually experienced, after a long spell of that seven days a week, not enough sleep, not eating well, not exercise. I had actually stopped exercising because I was, quote-unquote, you know, too busy. Mm-hmm. And I experienced burnout, which at the time I felt was a very, I always kind of felt like, don't be a victim, you know, stop your whining, like, just toughen up. But when you're going through real burnout, you know, everything that Kevi talks about, the physical, the social, emotional, the mental, the spiritual, all those aspects of your life that are not being nurtured, you really can feel yourself kind of topple over. So, like I said, as somebody who played with a very dull dull saw for a while, I feel like this habit is just so important.
Yeah, and we tend to think of sharpen the saw as learn more, work more, you know, those kind of things. And there's validity to that. We'll talk about that. But when you notice the burnout, realize that it's going to cost you a lot of money. And maybe you don't want to spend the money on getting a massage or getting your nails done or taking that weekend retreat. But you could spend it there, or you could spend it on your health later down the road. So I'd rather spend it on fun things and know that it's good for my business to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this whole conversation about self-care and resilience is critical, because as the economy starts to pick up, I always look at it like now is the time for companies to really be investing in their people, as you said, helping their teams with self-care. What's your sense on that, Marilyn? Is now a good time for people to start, businesses to start really honing in on this with their employees and teams?
It's always been a good time, but I think more than ever now is the time, because we are on an upsurge. And what happens is a lot of businesses, they've gone into debt to take care of the poor economic times. You know, they're trying to keep up, but they can't hire as many people as they need to keep up with the load. So you've got stress. You've got people working a lot of hours. So anything you can do to sharpen the saw that doesn't have to take time, and this might sound funny, but one of the things I do in my trainings is I'll have employees make a list of 20 things they love to do and see how we can sprinkle them into their calendars in ways that don't take time. And that might not seem possible, but my husband had a good example. He loves music, and he used to be in rock bands, but he has no time for that now, busy with work and all. But he thought, how am I going to put that in my calendar? So what he did is he pulled his guitar out, and when he watches the news, he strums it. And he bought one of those digital transfer from his, he has the old albums, you know, the vinyl. Young people don't know what vinyl albums are. But he transferred them all so he could hear his original songs that aren't on iTunes. And it's in the background. It takes no extra time, but his mood has been elevated so high from that one simple act. And I'll tell you another one that I saw. I worked with a library who they just came in first in service excellence after a year working with me on customer service. And they have, each employee gets a day where they get to pick the song of the day. And 10 minutes before the library opens, they play it full blast. And so it could be swing music, it could be rock, it could be just about anything. But the fun factor and what it does to lift up your mood is huge.
That is interesting. I love the idea of the you know, bringing people's mood up with music. I think that's always, you know, again, when I'm stressed, that always seems to be the thing that I forget to incorporate back in, just simple pleasures, right, of listening to great music or, you know, taking those walks in the park. Now, when I'm thinking about this, you know, in my experience, one thing I've seen some companies do is incorporate in health and wellness initiatives or, you know, try to encourage it, but they reward people for being on call 24/7. and they reward people for, you know, going the extra mile and working all weekend and canceling those plans to go play guitar with their buddies. And so, you know, I always have that question of whether or not if we're going to try to inspire sharpening the saw, how do companies effectively reward people for that type of behavior, even at the cost of trying to get things done?
You know, I think that what I've seen is rewarding creativity really, really works. And when I interviewed Singapore Airlines, now this is an airline that charges 20% more a ticket than any other airline, and they fill every flight. And one of the things that they do to reward their employees is they reward creativity. So who knows how to make things operate better than the people in the jobs? So when you ask your people, how can we be more efficient? How can we make this work with the resources we have? And really listen to that feedback and reward the feedback that they can implement, you'd be surprised what kind of amazing ideas come up.
I love that idea about creativity awards. And I remember working with a government department, I think it was a provincial government, and they were really struggling with just team resilience. This was a group of people who were very tired. They had had so much change, more change than any of my corporate clients that I've ever seen. And any time that something new was going to be introduced, you could really feel the energy just drain out of them. You know, their heads would be low, and they would think, oh, no, the flavor of the month, what is it this month? And they put together a think tank, really, of one leader and then about four or five people from their team. And that was exactly what they decided to do, was together to think of what are the ways that we can acknowledge and celebrate our team, what is meaningful to them. And the leader said to me later, he said, I'm so glad we did this, because everything that I was going to do to acknowledge or recognize or reward our team was not what they wanted. So it would have gone missed, or, you know, perhaps even caused other challenges. Is that something that you think is important, Marilyn, in terms of engaging people in this kind of a process?
Oh, it's so important. And, you know, knowing how to appreciate, it's a small thing that most people appreciate incorrectly. We do it in ways that actually make people suspect that what your motives are. You know, when somebody says, oh, you did a great job, oh, yeah, they're just saying that to get more work out of me. It's the classic, you go to a shopping center, put on a dress, and they say you look great in it when you look awful. You know, you don't trust it. And it can be as simple as putting to words, describing what your eyes see or how you feel specifically. So tell them why. You know, what is it you appreciate? What do you notice? And putting that into words, people will often work harder for the acknowledgement than they will for a bonus at the end of the year. Another thing that I've seen, Preston Wynn Spa does this. They have their sales staff pick the incentive of the month and the prize for the top seller, so that it's not her idea of what they want. They may want concert tickets. They may want any number of things, but they get the choice. They get to put it in there. And so you're giving them what they want. And that's a leadership sharpening of the saw, where you're not taking control, you're sharing control.
I think that's great. Well, and I'm thinking, too, about just to diverge for a second, your use of words, and you were talking about that. One thing that came to me in my experience with this one is during my burnout, actually, I ended up in Italy on a little bit of a break when I was actually trying to recuperate that physical, social, mental, spiritual, trying to fill those tanks. And one thing that was so funny is I had met an Italian, and I was sharing my story, and I said, yeah, I was so stressed out. And he looked at me and said, stress? And he was talking to his friend in Italian, and he's going back and forth. And what I found out is that in Italian there was no word for stress. So I thought it was amazing, because I realized, like I said, you just triggered it when you were talking about the use of specific words and language. They didn't understand what that word had been, and for months I had been walking around talking about how stressed I was, or how stressed out I was, and, you know, telling family and friends every time they called, oh, work is so stressful. And what was interesting is I had made up this word that kind of created this very oppressing entity and really was preventing me from sharpening the saw. Like, it really was keeping me in my own mind kind of locked down. So it was me. That day I made the decision to eliminate the word stress from my vocabulary. And when I came back and started managing a group, that was one of the first things I did, is I said, you know, you can't use that word anymore. I want you to tell me what's really happening underneath the word of stress. So, you know, when you're sharing with me, you know, how you're feeling in a moment, it has to be more specific than just saying, I'm stressed out.
I love that. And that's going toward the emotional part of sharpening your saw, going underneath the word stress to what's really there. For a lot of people, it's either guilt or resentment that starts creeping in that causes us to abuse our bodies and our, you know, stress ourselves out, going to burnout. And so if you look at guilt, you know, we often have this what a good manager would do or what a good employee does, and we want to live up to that expectation we have of ourselves, but something's not matching up. So the way we feel better about that is to say, okay, I feel guilty now because I'm not living up, I'm not getting the 20 hours a day in, or I'm not as productive as I'd like to be. So you could either change the behavior or you could change your definition of what a good person does. So maybe a good employee puts in 12 hours a day, but they take 15-minute breaks every hour to recharge their engines. So you start adding the things that would redefine your definition of a good employee or a good manager.
I love what you're talking about. This is awesome about just language aspects, Marilyn. This is really, really powerful because so many of the teams, and I'm sure you both see this, you go in and their language is not only about stress, as you said, Christine, but it's also focused on what's wrong instead of what could be right. And I can just imagine that how we talk about these things in our workplace would impact our ability to actively practice the habit of sharpening the saw. Is that a fair statement, Marilyn?
Absolutely. You show up in the world with the language you use, and you cannot transcend your language. So if you're saying, life is stressful, work is hard, you're giving a message to your subconscious because it doesn't know the difference between something you're making up and a reality. It just takes it at your face value. So when you say words like, I am getting curious about how I'm going to handle all this, as opposed to I'm getting stressed out about how I'm going to handle all of this, it sends a very different part of your brain into overdrive. You want your curiosity centers and your wonder centers to go off, not your fight and flight, you know, alarm system to go off. So language is huge in creating what you want to show up in your life.
Well, and I like that because you mentioned the word early, resilience, and I think that, or maybe it was Charmaine, but I like the fact that, you know, again, taking out those words that make people, you know, have a kind of a belief of oppression, and I loved how you mentioned, you know, guilt and resentment, absolutely. Taking that out of the language and then talking about resilient employees and, you know, mentally and emotionally nourished employees, and that we value that. We value, you know, well-balanced employees. And you know, having that kind of internal dialogue is definitely going to allow space for people to invite in some of these practices that we're talking about.
Well, and when you say that space, that's really an important point, because if you take something out of your languaging, you need to replace it. Otherwise, it'll be like this vortex that will suck back the old behavior, only it'll be 10 times bigger. Sort of like when you go on the yo-yo dieting, you stop eating, you starve yourself, and then all of a sudden all you have to do is, you want to do is eat, eat, eat. So you do need a replacement that helps you redefine things for yourself. And even something as simple as getting feedback. If you see feedback as pressure, that's one way to look at it. If a subtle awareness can change that. What if feedback is pleasure because you're celebrating what you just learned you could do, or something you just learned you did well, or something you can now do better? So that simple languaging can help just put you in a new direction.
Marilyn, you probably go into organizations a lot in the work that you do, and you see groups that are not practicing sharpening the saw, or maybe they think they are, but you're seeing it, of course, through a totally different lens. What does it look like in organizations when teams and leaders are not practicing this habit?
There's a lot of people who aren't happy. And what happens there is the best talent leaves. And really talented people like working with other really talented people, and it's an upward spiral that everybody gets engaged and grows together. But as that is true, people who aren't committed to success or don't have the skill set like to work with other people who are like them, and then there's this downward spiral because they can hide. And unfortunately, when a leader doesn't have the tools, they don't have the emotional resilience, they don't have these kind of very learnable skill sets, they tend to attract people like that. And I saw an example recently where there was such distrust that who do you suppose he attracted to hire? People that weren't very trustworthy. It's almost like a magnet. So it becomes so critical as a leader to sharpen your own saw, and the rewards are so good.
Wouldn't you argue, too, that, you know, when you get that kind of culture going where, you know, again, people aren't, you know, this is not a best practice or a regular habit, you have that distrusting leadership, or, you know, I think, you know, what I've witnessed is, you know, a very micromanaging, you know, let's get the most out of our people and really, you know, demand, you know, around the clock attention. I think that's where there's got to be great value for someone like yourself, Marilyn, to come in and actually really shake up that culture, because, you know, I always think that it must be hard to undo a lot of that thinking. You know, it's kind of the environment that created the cancer can't necessarily heal it without some kind of a catalyst coming in to really challenge status quo. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You can't, I think that in the Edison quote, it's very much like that you can't change something with the same thinking that got you where you are. So having that outside source, sometimes to simply ask a question can make all the difference. I was working with a team and I said, how do you answer the question, what do you do for a living? And oh my goodness, they went around and at the end they're like, help, this is not good. We become a commercial instead of something people really want to hear. And so just simply asking the questions about what is it you want? How might you get it? On a scale of 1 to 10, where are you now? What would it take to be a 10? And people can usually solve their own problems if the awareness is brought to their attention.
I love the fact that you're bringing up the whole concept of questions, because when I go into workplaces, especially when I am facilitating team building, I find that teams, especially if they're struggling with sharpening their saw and staying resilient, they fall into these traps of just doing things the way they've always done them, whether they work or not, and they communicate often in the same way. And I remember working with one team, it was a small business, and I think they had about 10 people, very long-term employees actually, very, very dedicated team members, but they'd fallen into these communication patterns that were really obvious to me because I'm an outsider looking in, and I'm using that skill that you talked about, Marilyn, curiosity, so I can ask those tough questions. What was going on, though, is there's all these assumptions that they were making, most of them which I'm not even sure the team was aware that they were making, really, really got in the way of these important conversations, and they just seemed to go around and around and around for a while until they got safe to start talking about what needed to change in the organization or in their company. And what really needed to change was a whole bunch of habits that were actually preventing them from sharpening their saw. And it took an outsider, like you said, just to ask the questions. Do you see that a lot, Marilyn, in businesses that you work with where they just sort of, where people get stuck in a pattern of coping or working that isn't serving them well, but they're not even sure that they're doing that?
They're not sure they're doing that, and they're not even necessarily aware. It's so under the surface. It's just become the culture, so it doesn't seem changeable, like you can't get your arms around it. Mm-hmm. One of the things I do with companies is I have everyone make an irritation list. And you think, why would you have them do that? We don't want to focus on the negative. But if you can make an irritation, top 10 irritation list, not only for yourself, but what you think your customer's top 10 irritations might be. Now you can do something with it. Now you can bring it to the surface. Like one company I was working with had a real issue with emails where people, you'd be trying to send out an email to a group and then people respond and start new tangents and include people who don't need to be on that answer. I don't know if you've ever gotten into an ugly, gnarly email chain that is wasting your time and energy.
Yes.
Yep.
So simply creating some processes and saying, here's the new way, you know, we had this meeting, this is the new way we're going to do email. If the response is yes, we'll assume it's yes unless we hear no. If you have something individual to share with somebody, do it off-site. Don't reply all. Simple things like that where you create a culture of ways to communicate and get rid of the irritations one by one by one. And you could be surprised. Somehow just in presencing the irritation and putting it on the calendar to be addressed, it just, your body relaxes because it's now not this invisible feeling that's going on around you. It's something tangible that can be changed.
I have to add to that, too, because I think that's such a great point. I was thinking while I was preparing for this, how it would be neat to bring a sharpen-the-saw kind of list of best practices to how people actually show up at work, not just what they do, let's say, when they're not working. So things such as shutting off your BlackBerry during important meetings and bringing presence and attention so that, you know, instead of there being burnout because you're trying to solve 10 problems during a meeting, you actually get the joy of working with that team and really experiencing the creative thinking or the problem solving that's taking place in the room.
Right. And you know, it's funny, as you're saying that, that might be true for certain types of organizations to turn the BlackBerry off. And others, I work at an ad agency that you walk into a meeting and they've got their laptops and they've got their Droids or their iPhones, they've got the conference call going with people from 5 different states and they've got the overhead projector going and everybody's clicking away. And it's almost that creative energy, and I think they'd be stressed if I told them to take it all away. So it depends on the situation and what they're doing, but getting in touch with what would work better for all of you, that kind of question, and finding out. So that, again, we got to watch those assumptions, because for me, turning everything off works great because I can be totally here for you. For somebody in an agency where things are happening they need to monitor, they'd be stressed to turn it off. So it's just so interesting to allow for everybody to work the way they work best as opposed to making an overall blanket statement, this is what we're going to do.
That's a great point. Actually, I had this very conversation. It's almost like you were in the room there, Marilyn, because we were having a conversation with a team that I was working with. They were having struggles. Their team is pretty much divided in the sense of 15 people. There's 7 of them that have been there a long time, and they're very, very skilled team members and have worked in their industry for a very long time. And then the other half of the group is quite new, sort of 2 years or less in the industry and new to the team. And there was a lot of conversations going on around technology. Some of the team members that have been there for a long time and weren't used to sort of writing notes in your cell phone on the notes page, they would handwrite them. There was a lot of assumptions going back and forth, and one group was assuming that the other group was not attentive, that they weren't engaged, and that they were playing on Facebook or something like that. And it was such an interesting conversation when one of them turned their iPad around and showed them this mind map that had created while the team was talking. And it was what I just loved is that silent moment when it's sort of like our brain catches up to what's really going on in the room. It really, you could almost see the shoulders go down and the trust start to, not form, but something happened in the room that was very powerful because assumptions got shattered.
Well, you know what happens when you increase knowledge, you lower fear. Our mutual friend Shonda Perrin, that's one of her quotes, and it's so true because when they turn that little iPod around and they could see that mind map and the value of it, their knowledge increased. And it's like, oh, I don't have to be afraid that they're wasting time. I get it. There's something different here I got to learn.
Got it.
Wow.
Great.
This has been very interesting, making me think. I'm taking notes over here.
me too.
Thanks. Yes. Well, ladies, we are already to the end of our half hour. As always, they go so quickly. I would love to get, Marilyn, you know, what are your takeaways or assignments or final thoughts for our audience?
You know what I would say is, because we haven't really touched on it yet, when you think of sharpening the saw, you think of lifelong learning. And when you engage in lifelong learning, you just remain relevant. You just keep growing, which is such a wonderful feeling. So anything that interests you, I would say get a book on it, get an audio book. If you're not somebody who sits down and reads, put it on your MP3 player when you exercise. But find a way to infiltrate knowledge and learning into your everyday life, because it really is rewarding and it makes everything so much better.
Perfect. And then, Charmaine, do you have anything in addition to that that you would leave our audience with?
I loved what Marilyn said about leaders sharing the control. And I know that that's just going to just pop out for a lot of the leaders that I work with and in the companies that are my clients. So I'm going to encourage them to think about what are the ways that they can engage their team and share that control with their team where appropriate.
Wow, that's good, too. Yeah, and I've got a lot of different thoughts on here, but I think I'd even add to that just noticing the language, you know, the positive language we're using to help help fill our teams up and reinforce the idea of resilience, and also maybe making a commitment to omit the word stress from the corporate language and helping people see around that so that they're more empowered and they can continue to make that commitment to sharpening the saw. I think that would be my takeaway. Thank you, ladies, so much for another great show. And I will have to wrap it up and hope that everyone out there has a fantastic day.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.